Here we go. All righty. If you could please silence your phones at this time. And again, we're going to ask you to refrain from getting up and down during our speaker. If you must, please do so quietly. If you find it necessary to smoke, please smoke outside across the street by the butt can and stay away from the entrances. Please be respectful as we're guests of this church. Tonight's a very, very special night, the end of the month, and we do our group anniversaries, the individuals in our group anniversaries. And tonight we're going to have Chris come up and give Eric his 5-year chip.
Hi everybody, my name is Chris Kelly, I'm alcoholic. I have had the honor of presenting 4 other chips to him, and this is his 5th one. You know, this is Eric's 5th anniversary, and a joy to get to know Eric, well, a joy to watch Eric grow in this program, really. And, you know, for everybody, there was a handful of people under 30 days, welcome. You know, this is what this is. Helen just picked up 19 years. You know, this is like show and tell is all this is. For those who are new and skeptical about this, I can personally attest I met Eric at one of the lower times of both of our lives, I think, and we were roommates in the county jail, and you know, this book up here, the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, talks about the age of miracles is still with us, that our own recovery proves that, and that has been you know, God shows up when I work with other people, and I get to see this power work in other people's lives where it's hard to see in my own life, and to watch the person Eric's become and continues to grow. This guy doesn't say no to anything. So if anybody needs anything done around their house or anything, this is your guy. But really, this guy is a servant, and it's a powerful thing to watch. His, you know, his family has been put back together around him, and just cool things. Last year, got to be the best man at his wedding, and just, you know, 100% for everybody that's new. I can't stress enough. This is 2 hopeless, broken people standing here that live decent lives today. You know, and don't obsess about taking a drink, and it's a good deal. So I love you, buddy. Happy birthday. Thank you.
I'm an alcoholic named Eric, and this is a great honor and privilege, you know, to receive this. And I just want to say congratulations to everybody who picked up a chip today, whether it was for 30 days, 60 days, you know, it doesn't matter. And especially that 24-hour chip, Jenny. You know, that's why I'm standing here still today, because I get to watch people recover. You know, I really get to honestly watch people recover, just like Chris got to watch me recover. And the person who's going to speak tonight, Sean, he was there watching me recover, though the verdict was out for a while, you know. And I'm just going to share a little bit about my experience about coming in and picking up that white chip. Mr. Bob right here shook my hand outside. He cornered me outside. And he gave me one of those awkward handshakes where he wouldn't let go of my hand. And he sincerely told me, keep coming back. And he said it twice. He said, keep coming back. It gets better. And you know what? It has gotten a lot better. You know, or maybe I just deal with it different, you know? Still hard. But maybe I just deal with it better. I don't know. But I want to thank everybody here. I mean, every single person, whether you know me or not, you know, just seeing you here is helping my recovery. Even right now. And like I said, Sean, he got to watch me, he got to invite me over to his house, you know, and he'd say, hey, you want a Hot Pocket? And then I'd see him again later on that week. I see him that week, and he's like, it's cold out. Why don't you want to come sleep on my couch, man? And, you know, it's people like Sean and Chris, you know, they showed up when I was living in a gated community for a year. And I got out, and Chris and Sean were the first guys, you know, in AA that I knew. You know, and he introduced me to this guy, Sean. And, I mean, this guy drove all the way up to Tampa to get me off the bus, you know. I had prison khakis on and Bobos, you know. And they took me to a meeting with like 250 people, it had to be. And I didn't ever felt, and I'm gonna just let the newcomers know, I never felt so out of place. You know, I didn't. I was in the back behind the little divider, you know, I didn't want to even be seen, but I'll tell you what, this is a great honor. Thank you, everybody. They keep coming back. So, I guess I already mentioned his name, but this guy has been there to watch me recover, you know, and by him just being there, you know, that speaks a lot. I mean, he's always got a place in my heart, and I'm going to introduce Sean. Sean.
I'm Sean, and I'm an alcoholic. And this is my home group, and my sobriety date is May 23rd, 2008. And I currently do not have a sponsor. just at that spot right now. I'm just in between sponsors, and it's okay. You know, I got a bunch of good gentlemen in my life that hold me accountable, and they know everything about me. You know. You know, it's an honor to speak. I always knew I was an anniversary speaker, you know. But it's an honor to be here. It's an honor to do anything for Alcoholics Anonymous. And the big book tells me to share in a general way what it was like, what happened, and what my life is like today. And I'll try to do that to the best of my ability. And, you know, I'll try and do this talk in my best Southern accent. It's obvious I'm not from down here, you know. And this is just one, I mean, this is my least favorite thing to do in Alcoholics Anonymous, is to get up here and share my experience, strength, and hope with you people. It's just, my heart's beating, I'm sweating, I'm nervous, you know. But those are all good things that I could tell you about today that, like, before I wouldn't be able to tell you these things, you know. So I was born and raised in Massachusetts. I come from a loving home. You know, I have four brothers, two sisters, a loving parents, you know, and I always start my talk off the same way, you know, and alcoholism runs deep in my family. You know, I watched my dad drink from a very young age. I remember my granddad when I was a kid, he was a drinker. He died from cirrhosis of the liver. My dad was an identical twin brother who died from untreated alcoholism. Him and his twin brother, they both died from heart disease that was caused by alcoholism. And, you know, one passed away when he was, my dad passed away when he was 53, and I believe my uncle passed away when he was about 42. They found him dead in my older brother's bedroom. And it was all related to alcohol and drugs. And, you know, and none of those things make me an alcoholic. What makes me an alcoholic is I pick up one, and I can't stop. I can't stop, and I use drugs too, you know. Drugs just help me hit my bottom quicker, and I know this is Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'll try not to talk about them, but I'll touch briefly about them, and I'll get right out of it, because I definitely respect Alcoholics Anonymous, and I took my first drink. I was about 15 years old. Me and a couple of my buddies, he said we were going out drinking this weekend, and I used to get $5 a day for lunch. My mom used to give me $5 a day for lunch, and I saved up that money all week. And one of my good friends who belongs here is not here. His parents, well, his mom, she was a single parent, so she was going out to play cards with all her girlfriends, and we were having a little party up there, and I can remember it like it was yesterday. You know, I'm glad I remember my first drink. It was Sex on the Beach. And, you know, from drinking, I mean, I can't, even if I was drinking right now, I can't drink peach schnapps anymore. You know? I can't. I don't like the smell of it. I don't even eat peaches. And, you know, and that magic happened. I've had some drinks before that, and it never happened. You know, I did, you know, I was, you know, you have to lie to your parents when you're taking your first drink, and that's what I did. Told her I was staying out. I was sleeping over at my friend Dave's house. And we set out to get drunk, and that's exactly what we did. And everybody got caught, but I didn't. You know, but it was okay. You know, because all their parents drank, my parents drank, you know, and there was really no consequences for it. But that magic happened, and, you know, growing up as a kid, you know, and these are things that I don't like to share, but I share because that's how I felt when I was a young kid. So I have four brothers, two sisters, and honestly, the house, it's not really clean. And, you know, and I can't have friends over, you know, and all my friends have friends over in their house, and I'm the only one, and I get teased about it from all my friends, and, you know, and not saying that's why I drank, but that's one of the reasons why, when I felt like that, I didn't want to feel like that. You know, I never felt comfortable in my own skin, and when I got drunk, like, all that stuff went away. I forgot about all those things, and, but anyways, I tried to drink as much as I could. You know, I was in high school when I first started drinking. It might have been eighth grade when I first started drinking, and I tried to drink whenever I could, and I would save up my money every day when I knew we were going out drinking, and when the weekend came, we drank, and really nothing bad happened at the beginning, you know, and it was just alcohol and a little bit of marijuana, and nothing bad happened, you know, and we did it as often as we could, and, you know, I told you that, like, my brother's in recovery now, he's down here, he's living with me, and, you know, me and my friends would see our older brothers, and they'd be all messed up on, like, heavy drugs and all kinds of crazy stuff, and they were doing crazy things and getting arrested and stuff, and I always said, I'm like, I'm never going to be like that. I'm never going to be like that. I'm going to make something of myself. You know, and I remember my dad used to get up, he raised seven of us, and, you know, I hear Joe talk about it a lot, about, you know, his kids think that he's his hero. Well, my dad was my hero. You know, he was, you know, how I like to describe my dad is, you know, I remember this one time I used to play baseball, you know, and I'm good at sports. That's what I exceed in. I exceed in sports. And I'm in center field, and there's this kid, and he's playing for the Expos, and I remember it like it was yesterday. His name was Carmen DeChico. Right? And he hits the shot, and it's out in center field, and I just reach my hand over the fence, and I grab it. And, like, my dad jumps up in the stand. He's the only guy standing up in the stand, and he's like, that's my son. Like, I feel like that right now. Like, he's looking down on me saying, you know, this is where I need to be. This is what I'm supposed to be doing, you know. Try to carry a message of hope to the alcoholics who still suffer. You know, so that's when I realized I had a problem with alcohol and drugs. You know, it was back in 97. My dad passed away from alcoholism, and I was all messed up. It was an inconvenience, honestly. Like, it was an inconvenience that he passed away, and I had to go and do all these things, had to go to the wake. I was sad, don't get me wrong, but it got in the way of my drinking, and it got in the way of my using, you know. And it was the first time that I realized that I had a problem with alcohol, and I went to my first detox. It was a couple of weeks after he passed away. You know, I cried like a big baby because I really missed him, and those feelings started to set in after the alcohol was gone. And I started to realize what was going on, like, it hurt, and I missed them. But I wasn't ready to get sober. I went there, I stayed sober for a couple of days, and I went to a meeting, I raised my hand, said I was new, I needed some numbers, and, you know, and I never did anything with it, you know. But the seed was planted. You know, I went to my, it was the other fellowship back there. It's bigger, it's stronger up there in Massachusetts. And, you know, whatever works, you know what I mean? It's both 12-step programs, so whatever works for you. And I went back out and I started drinking again and ended up back in another detox. And, you know, I've been up in Massachusetts. It's easy to get into recovery, like into rehabs and stuff like that. Down here, it's really tough. Like, there's detoxes on every other corner up there in Massachusetts. They got liquor store and detox. And the good part about it is they give you health insurance, too. So, you know, I'm starting to become a regular in these places, and they start to know me by name, and, you know, it's like Cheers, you know? But it's a detox. So, like I said, I start to become a regular in this place, and I'm at this place down in Plymouth, Massachusetts, and I've been there plenty of times before, and I talked to this gentleman a few different times before that, and he's like, what's going to be different this time? You know, every time you come in for a week, you leave, you come back in 3 months later or 2 months later. He's like, what's going to be different this time? And I was out of gas. I was just like, I don't know. And he was like, well, let me make a suggestion. Why don't you go to a halfway house? And I just, for the first time in my life, I just said, set up the interview. You know, I went to that halfway house. I came back. They accepted me. I went back the next day. And I stayed there. I stayed there for about 5 3/4 months. And the place was a 6 month. Because I didn't do what they wanted me to do, you know. Everybody knows the deal. You know, you gotta change everything. I didn't change a damn thing. Not one little thing about me. You know, I was still lying. I was still manipulating. I was still up to all those same behaviors that I was. You know, it was just like I put down the drinks and all the behaviors stayed the same. You know, and they asked me to leave 3 months later. So I moved in with my sponsor. And he was one of those sponsors that I had, was like, yep, that's my sponsor back there. Never did a step in my life. I fell down the steps. And the drink came back a year later. I stayed sober for a year. You know, I didn't take any of the suggestions. I got into a relationship. What else did I do? I did a lot of things wrong, you know? That's just what I did. You know, and insanity is like repeating the same thing over and over and expecting different results. But when the obsession came back, I drank. You know, I did what a good alcoholic does. I drank. And it took me a couple of years to get back this time. You know, it took me about 2 years to get back. I went to the exact same detox. He set up another interview for another halfway house. And this time they caught on to me quicker at this halfway house. They got me in 3 months and they threw me out. You know, because I didn't listen. I didn't listen to a thing they said. They had these rules in place for a reason, you know, and it's just like the steps. You follow the steps. You're doing with a sponsor that's been through the work, and you follow the suggestions and try and live by principles, and your life turns out pretty good. I wasn't doing any of those things, and I stayed sober for 18 months this time. And, you know, and see, I always thought you measured up by what you had. That's how I thought you measured up in life, you know, by the gold that you had on your neck or the sneakers that you had on your feet, you know, and the car that you were driving around in, but it was all a lie. You know, that's how I thought you measured up, so that's what I did. You know, I thought if I had a nice girlfriend, a nice car, a nice gold chain, but I was insane. I was dying on the inside. I was insane, you know. I was actually, at this point in my life, I was the only person that did steroids and got fat. And this is just what I'm doing because I don't have a solution. You know, I have no solution whatsoever. And I'm selling pounds of weed out of the back of my trunk and I'm shooting steroids. I hadn't started drinking yet, but that was not too far behind it. And, you know, so I have a nice girlfriend, a nice apartment, a nice job, a nice car, and the girlfriend leaves. And what do? I drink, you know, because I never did any work on myself. And then it took me a little while to get back into the program, and that was, so how I ended up here is, I ended up overdosing, and, you know, and, it just wasn't my time to go, you know, the apartment that I was staying in, the landlord lived right downstairs from me. He was a mailman, and he was just getting home from work, pulled up in his car, and the ambulance and the fire engines are there, and then he's got me laid out on the gurney going to the hospital. And And he just looked at me and he was like, you got 15 days to get out of here. So like a good, I already got a plan in place, you know? Like a good alcoholic that I am, I already have this plan in place and I just furnished everything. I had a nice kitchen table that matched the living room set. The pots and pans matched, you know. Even I had some wine glasses up there because I was at a friend's house one night and this is how I psych myself out all the time. I just always say, if I don't end up back on heroin, I can drink. I can absolutely drink. And we're over at a friend's house and we're drinking wine. Well, they're drinking wine, and I said, no, I can have a glass of that. It's my best friend in the world. He's not an alcoholic. He's not a drug addict. And, you know, and nothing happens, you know. It's like that part in the Big Book that they talk about, the drinks that we see others taking with impunity. And I would see him take a drink, and I would psych myself out, and I'd be like, I can drink. I absolutely can drink. And then I made my, and then what happened was I drank with him. I go back to my apartment for like the next week and a half, maybe 2 weeks. I stopped making myself dinner and polishing off a bottle of wine all by myself. You know, and but anyways, so that the landlord says you got 15 days to get out, so I, you know, I do like a good alcoholic does, you know? You have an everything must go sale, you know? And I sell everything. The furniture goes out, the kitchen table, you know. I sell it all. And I post up in a hotel room for the next couple of days. And then I end up back in one more detox and like a good alcoholic that I am, when something goes wrong in my life, I turn right to my mother, my biggest enabler. and I call my mom and I say, Ma, you know, I make up some story. You know, it wasn't the truth. And I end up back on her couch for the next couple of weeks. And, you know, and I knew Alcoholics Anonymous worked. That's the thing right there. I knew Alcoholics Anonymous worked. Like, I know I didn't work on myself. I didn't do any step work. I didn't have really like a sponsor that was taking me through the Big Book, but I knew this thing worked. And I, at this time, like, I'm living on my mom's couch. I'm going out drinking. I'm going out using. And I seen both of my brothers. Both of my brothers get out. And my older brother, Richie, has been down here for about 11, 12, maybe 13 years. And both of my brothers came down here at the same time, and they moved in with my brother, Richie. And both of them ended up back in Massachusetts in their own addiction. And I said to myself, I said, you know what? I go, I'm going to move to Florida. I'm going to move to Florida, and I'm going to go to Alcoholics. Well, they told me I had to come to Alcoholics Anonymous. So I called them, and I said, Rich, man, I really need some help. I can't stop drinking. I can't stop using. I need some help. And he said, all right. He goes, I can't make that decision right now. He goes, let me call you back in like 20 minutes. And he did, and he said that you can come down here. I said, all right, great. He was like, there's two rules. He's like, you go to AA, and you find a job within 2 weeks, or you can't stay at my house. And I said, all right, I think I could do that. And before the plane landed in Tampa, I already had a job. My brother, they, you know, I like the easiest off the way. They found me a job. And it was kind of, my older brother isn't an alcoholic. You know, he can drink and nothing bad happens in it. Well, I've seen some bad things happen. But I don't know if he's an alcoholic or not. It's not my decision to make that. But it was kind of funny. Right before I got here, he got a DUI. And he knew where to go. He knew exactly where to go. He took me to the A Club. I went in there and I got a where and when. And my life changed, you know. And I remember when I first got here, I was a couple of weeks sober, and I got this sponsor. He's just a temporary sponsor at this time, you know, because I only want to have temporary sobriety, like they say, you know. So I got this sponsor, and I get invited to a cookout where there's going to be alcohol and probably some other stuff. And so I tell him, I'm like, listen, I'm going to go to this cookout. It's going to be great, you know. It's going to be girls in bikinis. It's going to be alcohol, you know. Just out of my, I don't think I said alcohol, but I used like, is there going to be alcohol there? And I looked at him with the most straight face I've ever looked at someone with, and I said, listen, I'm not going to hide from alcohol for the rest of my life. I come to realize I had no business being around alcohol at 2 weeks sober, you know. I stay away from alcohol now, and I've been sober a little over 8 years, you know. I mean, if I have to be around alcohol, I'm okay with it. I can be there, you know. But at 2 weeks sober, I had no business, and I drank, and I smoked some weed, and I still came to AA. But my life was a fraud. You know what I mean? I was coming here and you guys thought I had about a month sober and I didn't. I had about 2 weeks sober and I walked around with that for a long time. Well, a couple of weeks. And I was 2 weeks sober, legit 2 weeks sober. And I picked up a month chip at the KISS group. And it was a beginner's meeting on a Monday night. I used to attend it a lot. And then I raised my hand to talk about how great my life was. You know, and I knew at that point that, like, if I didn't change something, like, nothing was going to change. It didn't matter that I came to Florida to try and change my life. If I didn't do what I set out to do and be honest, rigorously honest, that my life wasn't going to change, and I'd end up back in Massachusetts, back on alcohol and drugs again. And, you know, I was going to that KISS group, and there was a couple of guys who attended that group regularly, and I hooked up with this one, Chris Carpenter, and I asked him to be my sponsor, and I was dead serious about, you know, doing what I have to do to stay sober, and he 12-stepped me. He started asking questions about me and telling me a little bit about himself, and he asked me, he was like, you know, you want me to be your sponsor, what are you willing to do? And I honestly told him I was willing to do anything, you know, and he was like, all right, I'm going to call you on that. When, you know, if you're willing to go to any lengths for victory over alcohol, he was like, then I'm willing to sponsor you. And he started to pick me up every Saturday morning, and we'd go sit in Starbucks parking lot, and he would buy me a cup of coffee because I didn't have any money, and he read the big book Alcoholics Anonymous to me, first 164 pages, you know. We got on my knees and we did a third step prayer, and then, you know, he gave me the directions to do a fourth step. You know, I was probably like a month into this, and he came to me and he was like, you know, he's like, you said you were willing to go to any length for victory over alcohol. He's like, I ain't that type of sponsor. If you're not willing to finish this fourth step, you need to find a new sponsor. And that just put the flame under my butt, and I wrote it and I finished it, and at this time, you know, I got materialistic things that's starting to happen in my life. You know, I got this little John boat, you know, so I think like, oh, this is going to be great. I'm going to get this John boat. I'm going to take my sponsor out onto the Gulf. I'm going to read my fifth step. It's going to be awesome, you know, so I'm out there. I read him the fifth step, right? I came back. I felt like I was on fire. It was great. You know, a big weight lifted off my shoulder, right? It was right around the time that BP had that big oil spill. And my friend's father says to me, he goes, not even BP could clean up that mess. Took the wind right out of my sails. I started to do this thing, man. I started to really trust God. You know, at this time I started to build a relationship with a higher power, and my life really took off, you know, And I'm not going to sit up here and say, like, everything's been great since I've been sober, because it hasn't. You know, I was about 3 years sober, and I give you guys everything, you know what I mean? Because that's what they tell me to do, you know? They tell me to give you everything. And this happened in sobriety. I'm dating this girl before I met my wife, you know, so, and things are bad in my life. You know, I'm not going to as many meetings as I should be. I'm really not, you know, I'm telling the guys that I'm hanging out with what's going on, and they're like, dude, you just got to get out of this relationship. You know, at this point, this girl relapsed. I'm in a relationship with this girl, and she relapsed, and it's getting ugly, and my behavior's starting to, like show, you know, and I ended up in front of a judge with a restraining order, right, and she pounds on the podium, and she's like, you're a stalker, and in my head, right, because this is how sick I am, I'm like, obsessive compulsive at best. That girl is no longer with us. She passed away from this illness. You know, that's what this thing does to us. It takes people. It takes lives. It puts us in jail. You know, it just breaks up families. Thank God I didn't drink, because I was probably close at a couple of times. You know, you always lower the bar. You know what I mean? You guys hear about that all the time in Alcoholics Anonymous, lowering the bar. You know what I mean? Oh, I'm not going to hang out with her if she's drinking. Well, she can come over as long as she takes a couple of drinks in the bathroom. That's okay. You know what I mean? And I would keep on lowering and lowering and lowering. And before you know it, she was smoking crack in my kitchen. And I'm sober. You know? Sober right out of my mind. You know? And the truth. She ends up passing away, and it was really sad, you know. She had two kids, you know. It was bad all around, and I ended up reworking the steps again with another sponsor, and I started to get back into this thing, you know, and my life started to change again, you know, and I started to catch fire for this thing, and I started going to, you know, treatment centers and speaking to Fast 2 and sponsoring guys, and it was actually funny. I was just talking to my sponsor the other night, and that's how sick we are. He was like, you find a sponsor yet? I'm like, no. He was like, well, the only way you're losing me is if you drink. So that's the type of sobriety you want. You know, so I get caught back on fire for this thing, and I stop doing this thing, and then, just great things start happening in my life. I ended up landing this decent job, and ended up meeting a new girl in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, and our second date, the U-Haul truck pulled up. just kidding. but I start dating this girl, and things start happening, and eventually we moved in together, and eventually she got pregnant, and then. You know, in October he'll be sober and he'll turn 3. we ended up what a great experience. You know, I was cutting the umbilical cord on October 28th, 2013. I was cutting an umbilical cord for my little son, and it was kind of crazy because like she didn't get to experience what I experienced because she had a C-section and she got all drugged up from the stuff, and like I'm the first one to hold this little kid, and I never cried like that in my life. You know, it was the greatest experience of my life, being sober and, you know, being a dad, and just thinking like back, like now I get to, you know, like my parents made a lot of mistakes. I'm not blaming them for my mistakes. They made a lot of mistakes on raising some, you know, they gave us good morals and values. You know, they raised us right, but they made some mistakes, and it was a good experience to learn. You know what I mean? Seeing all those mistakes that were made, and like I don't have to worry about like my son coming home and the phone's gonna get shut off, or the mortgage isn't gonna be paid. You know, that's my dad was an alcoholic and a drug addict, and those are the things that happen. You know, you come home and the lights are shut off. Next day they're on in my name. You know, they get a couple, you know, maybe a year later they get shut off again. They're in my little sister's name. You know what I mean? I had to clean up a little bit. I had to clean up a little bit of wreckage of the past, and it wasn't even my fault. You know, and it's kind of funny. You know, you get in this thing, and you're doing good, and things are happening, and your life's going pretty good, and then you get a phone call from like your older sister from back in Massachusetts, and she was like, "Yep, I think your brother Mike used your name again and got arrested." And these are the things that I dealt with. You know, when I got sober, I had like. My brother Mike took like, I don't mind putting this out there because it's okay. He took 3 ambulance rides in my name. You know, but what time we got? Cause we're close. Nice. No, but I've experienced a lot of things because of, you know, sponsorship and step work and, you know, just doing, you know, I don't always want to do what I have to do, but I do it anyways, you know, and my life turned out pretty well. You know, it's amazing that I can do for like my family, you know, what someone did for me. My older brother let me come down and get clean and sober, and I let my older brother come down to do the same exact thing. And like he lives under my roof, and it's just a joy to see. Like when I walk through the door at night and I'm sitting there with my son like leaps off the couch and he jumps into this kid's hands and he's like, "That's my Uncle Mike." And it's just, it eats me up. It really does. And like these are the gifts that I get to experience today. You know, like it doesn't always happen, but like I could be, you know, loving and caring to my wife. Not always the case. Most of the time I'm like self-centered and egotistical and just like always thinking about myself and not caring about anybody else, but you know, they tell me to pause when agitated when you read the book, you know, and sometimes I have to pull over when agitated, you know. But my life is pretty amazing today, and like I owe it all to you guys. Like I showed up, like Chris was talking about, like with Eric, you know, I showed up a broken man, and you guys helped put the pieces back together again. You know, my life's pretty awesome today. You know, like, you know, congratulations to all the newcomers, everybody that picked up a chip, and Eric. You know, I used to get mad at Eric. Like I just got this a new apartment, I was staying over in Counting Arms, and I'd be like, Eric, what's up, man? You want to come sleep over? And he was like, no, I'm just going to stay behind the church tonight. Eric was homeless for a little while. Everything he owned was in my trunk. For the longest time, he'd be like, dude, can you meet me down in the A Club? I got to get a change of clothes. But, you know, it was cool. You know, I'd be able to call up Eric and be like, yo, you want to stay over the house tonight? You know, I'll give you a Hot Pocket and some waffles. So that's how I don't eat healthy, you know. But it's just honestly, it's a joy to be sober, and it's an honor to be here. It's an honor to be a member of this group. Like I mean, I helped start this group. We moved from the A Club to here, and this meeting we started it 1 week, and there was like 40 people. The next week there was like 50 people, and then we just kept on promoting it, and now there's like, you know, 120 people on a Friday night. Like, I get pumped when I'm coming down here, you know? Like Dorinda said, anybody cross over two bridges? I did. I crossed over the Port Richey Bridge and the Main Street Bridge. But, I'm really glad to be here, and thank you guys for my sobriety.